This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey everyone, it's Hamish from the Young Investors Podcast. Myself and Brandon are excited to bring you your weekly rundown of the latest business and investing news from around the world. Now, a quick reminder before we get into the podcast is that nothing in this podcast should be taken on as personal financial advice. If you're ever unsure about your finances or investing, make sure you reach out to a qualified financial advisor. But with that said, let's get into another episode of the Young Investors Podcast.
All right, guys, welcome back. Hamish, how you going, mate?
I'm doing well. Yeah, going well. Another week.
Going well.
Another week gone by.
How's your running going?
I started last week.
Oh,
I haven't done much this week.
It's
already gone. No, I wasn't even going to bring it up, but I've had like pretty bad back pain this week, so I haven't really been doing anything. So I'm going to go see a physio, which I've been putting off for a while because I've had back pain for probably, I don't know, it's like a few couple months, but it's gotten really bad this week, so...
Yeah,
it's gotten to the point where I always postpone stuff, like health stuff, until it affects my ability to work. and then I'm like, okay, I better deal with this. It's probably not a good strategy. But
it's a strategy.
It's a strategy. It's probably not good. Yeah.
Damn. So still pretty nasty. You actually should.
Yeah,
today you're going to book an appointment with a physiotherapist.
I actually booked it this
morning. Oh, you
already
did.
It was so bad this week that I got up and the first thing I did was book an appointment.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm a little bit sleepy because I haven't slept very well the last few days, but that's okay.
Damn.
That's all right.
Sorry to hear that, mate.
That's okay.
It's no good. I understand how crippling back pain can be. I'm sure a lot of our viewers would as well.
Yeah.
It's quite common.
Pretty common.
But yeah, it sucks when things start messing with your sleep.
Yeah.
And you just can't get a good night's rest in.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you'll be right.
Yeah, I'll be fine.
I'll have like that Tony Abbott. You remember when mate, shit happens.
Yeah. Well, what do I do if I have anxiety? Don't worry about it, mate. Just don't worry about it.
Just don't worry about it, mate. Man cures anxiety globally.
Yeah, exactly right.
All right, Hamish, what on earth are we talking about today? We've got some interesting stories, actually. We've got some China macroeconomic news, which we'll dive into because they've got some very interesting statistics coming out over there. Moody's, more credit ratings news.
Mm.
Just when you thought we couldn't have a boring enough week for Moody's to make it in.
Yeah, when it rains, it pours. We're going to do it 2 weeks in a row of credit ratings. Woohoo!
Woo! Get excited, everybody.
No.
This is going to be the best podcast episode.
No, but we've got that. And then we've also got, this is maybe more exciting on the retail side, a new meme stock. Is in town.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, NVIDIA wasn't enough. One for 2023 wasn't enough. So we've got another one, which we can talk through for sure.
Nice. And actually, to save us even more, I've got a really interesting story about AI-generated music. Like AI copying the sounds of people like Taylor Swift or Drake and that kind of thing. So we'll talk about this and what the industry is kind of doing about it.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So, lots to talk about.
Yeah.
Hamish Hodder, who is the sponsor
of today's episode? So, today's episode is sponsored by Seeking Alpha, your one-stop shop for stock analysis, market data, and news. Access expert analysis and news for thousands of stocks. View buy, hold, and sell ratings from members, Wall Street analysts, and Seeking Alpha's own algorithm. Screen for stocks using a variety of fundamental and technical analysis metrics. Access 10 years of financial data and company filings. Manage your portfolio by tracking your investments with Price Alert so you never miss a buying opportunity again. Click the link in the episode description or head directly to seekingalpha.me/younginvestors. That's seekingalpha.me/younginvestors to try Seeking Alpha free for 14 days. And I will just say, Seeking Alpha is extremely useful. in earnings season, which we're kind of going through at the moment, for looking at transcripts and looking at analysis and news for all the results coming out for different companies. So, yeah, especially if you're someone who loves to dive into what companies are doing, yeah, Seeking Alpha is a good place for you to go.
Yeah, I've been using it heaps. We're redoing some of our course content, as most people are probably aware at the moment. And that has been such a lifesaver. It's just so nice having the 10 years worth of financials. It's so handy.
Yeah.
It's so nice. Very, very handy analysis tool. So yeah, thank you to Seeking Alpha for sponsoring. All right, Hamish, where on earth do we start?
Let's start with some economic data that came out of China this time. So we don't spend too much time talking about economic data from China. We kind of regularly cover the US and Australia, but every now and then.
And the UK.
And the UK, that's true. And even Europe, actually, sometimes as well. But whenever there's something interesting or particularly kind of that stands out in other regions or other areas, it's always interesting to take a look. And in China's case, they actually reported something that we're not seeing a whole lot of around the world at the moment, which is deflation. Not inflation, deflation, which they reported in July. So the consumer price index in China fell 0.3% in July from a year ago. It was up 0.2% when compared to June, but it fell on a year-over-year basis. And it's actually the first year-on-year decline since 2021. So that's interesting because, of course, yeah, it's surprising to see any region go through deflation at the moment. But they also had deflation last in 2021, where for most countries it was in 2020. So just to give a bit of context on kind of China's inflation history over the last couple of years, their inflation was actually up over 5% before the pandemic. So their economy was running really hot.
It's booming.
Yeah, absolutely booming. It's been, you know, an absolute beast of an economy, almost rivaling the US now. And then it essentially fell into deflation briefly in 2021 before rising back up to 2.8% in late 2022. And then since then, inflation has cooled and is now negative. So, yeah, they've certainly not had the inflation crisis that you know, many other parts around the world that we've spoken about, the US here in Australia. And there's a couple of reasons behind that, which we'll probably get into.
I guess to set the scene maybe for that, I guess the reason why we've seen inflation across most of the major economies in the world is because kind of concurrently you had both sides of the supply-demand equation being pushed in the inflationary direction. So you had supply constrained during the, you know, pandemic and the year or so after. So you had supply was down for a lot of things. You know, you remember the talk about the chip shortage and consumer electronics and all that sort of stuff. Supply was down. And then at the same time, you have demand up. And the way that demand was up is because the central banks of the world printed a lot of money. And in one way or another, that money found its way through to the citizens, the end consumer. So while people were, you know, they were doing it tough, they also got a little bit of a boost, an injection of cash. And you can look at things like the US savings rate. It has this massive spike, very out of the ordinary. And that's because people were essentially gifted money. Yeah. And what that led to is a major increase in demand. Like people had the cash and they started spending it.
Yeah.
So you have supply constrained at the same time you have demand elevated, and both of those forces are inflationary. And so what do you know? You get inflation. Mm. Whereas as I understand it, in China, there was a slightly different set of factors and a slightly different supply demand equation. Is that correct?
I don't actually know a whole lot about the specific stimulus that they provided, but as far as like kind of demand side stimulus, so consumer stimulus, there really wasn't anything anywhere near the scale of the US or the UK or Australia. And as you mentioned, that's, you know, a part of the reason why inflation has been so persistent, even as the cost of living has risen so much, say in Australia, and interest rates have gone up so much, because of those extra savings that people have from COVID, the demand has just been very, very persistent, even though you know, costs have gone up a lot. You haven't really seen people cutting back in a major way yet.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was kind of headline. CPI was fell kind of 0.3%. Core CPI, which excludes the volatile food and energy categories, actually rose 0.8%. So the core CPI was still positive. Very similar story everywhere, right? You've got now core inflation being higher than overall inflation because energy is very, very negative for most places around the world. The president and chief economist of Pinpoint Asset Management said both the CPI and PPI are in deflationary territory. The economic momentum continues to weaken due to lackluster domestic demand. What does he mean by lackluster domestic demand? This is a quote from Louise Liu, the lead economist at Oxford Economics. She said, China's weak demand follow through in Q2 can be attributed to its relatively contained demand side stimulus during COVID. So it's kind of what we just spoke about. Years of regulatory tightening and ongoing housing correction, which has been another element of the Chinese economy, which is this massive housing crisis with these huge property development companies struggling.
Yeah.
So those are kind of the main factors going into why China's in a bit of a different situation than the US.
So unlike most of the economies that we've been talking about, where they have a crazy strong demand side still from all the factors that I was talking about before that we just discussed, in China, they just don't have that same demand issue. In fact, the CCP is now under pressure and thinking about putting in place policies that actually encourage people to go out there and spend their money. I think there was, I should have written this down, but I think there was like special incentive to, they're thinking about some incentive to buy like electronic or appliances or new cars or something like that. I'm not exactly sure, but they're actually thinking about encouraging demand, like putting in place measures to actually boost that up, because that's what they're not seeing. Whereas over here, we've got still lots of demand and they are just not seeing much demand at all.
Interesting. Yeah, the country also reported a 14.5% decline in exports and a 12.4% decline in imports. And on the import side, the decline is partly due, or mostly due, I think, to the declines in commodity prices. It was also noted that it was partly related to a 0.4% decline in volume of actual imports, which kind of speaks to the decline in internal demand for goods.
You also have manufacturing activity in China. It contracted for the fourth straight month in July. So again, more on this, I guess, supply side of things. Well, I guess supply goes, like, if demand is not there, then supply goes down. But yeah. You've got factors on the supply side as well. It's interesting seeing the exports and imports both slumping at the same time. But makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. Do we have anything else for what's going on over in China?
Yeah, I'm not too sure. I saw an article. Dan Wang, a Shanghai-based economist at Hang Seng Bank, said the inflation and trade numbers were a reflection of lower purchasing power and weak consumer confidence. The only other thing that I've got that I had a look at is that, it's just noted that further data releases next week will provide a broad overview of economic activity in July, including industrial production and retail sales.
Right.
So there's probably if you want to look into it, there'll be an update in the next week or so.
Yeah.
But I think, that's just about all I had. It's just interesting to contrast kind of China with the rest of the world and how they're different. But
all I was going to say is we'll be able to watch potentially over the next year or so how China is impacted by the US, because we haven't really seen the US stumble economically at all. Really, it's still a really strong economy. The Fed is still potentially doing more rate hikes. But if that tends to shift and the US continues to take in less imports from China or less exports from China, then seeing how those dynamics work will be something we can kind of watch as well.
Mm. Yep. Very good, Hamish. Where should we move to next?
Give us this Moody's story because we kind of made fun of Moody's last week, and I think they heard us because we were saying that they were the only one that hadn't changed the Eddie ratings in a while. Well, at least they hadn't changed the government credit rating in a while. So we're kind of saying, are they actually doing anything over at Moody's? And then now they have done something.
Like, oh, crap, Young Investors podcast have called us out. We better do something. So they responded in a big way, Hamish. They responded in a big way.
Wow.
The headline says Moody's cuts ratings of 10 US banks and puts some big names on downgrade watch.
Ooh.
Yeah. It says here, Moody's cut the credit ratings of a host of small and mid-sized US banks late Monday and placed several big Wall Street names on negative review. The firm lowered the ratings of 10 banks by one rung, while major lenders Bank of New York Mellon, US Bancorp, State Street, Truist Financial, Cullen Frost Bankers, and Northern Trust are now under review for a potential downgrade. Moody's also changed its outlooks to negative for 11 banks, including Capital One, Citizens Financial, and Fifth Third Bancorp. Among the smaller lenders receiving an official ratings downgrade were M&T Bank, Pinnacle Financial, BOK Financial, and Webster Financial. So they have just come in and swung the axe. And I'll tell you a little bit more about... about why they've decided to do this. The quote is, US banks continue to contend with interest rate and asset liability management risks with implications for liquidity and capital as the wind down of unconventional monetary policy drains system-wide deposits and higher interest rates depress the value of fixed rate assets, Moody's analysts Jill Katina and Anna Arzov said in the accompanying research note. So I guess it's pretty much exactly what we've already seen happen, what we saw play out earlier in the year. You know, a few banks, we saw a couple of banks in particular exposed, they left themselves exposed pretty much to a lot of government bonds that had gone down a lot in value because of interest rates going up. And as depositors withdrew their funds, they had to sell those bonds because they needed the money. So they sold the bonds at a massive loss. They didn't want to, but they had to because they had to keep the money flowing for all these withdrawals. But in doing so, they sold all the bonds at a massive loss. And that they then have to report that, which then sparks a lot of other depositors going, oh my gosh, we better take the money out while we still can. Look, they're having to sell their bonds at a massive loss.
Yeah.
Whole lot more depositors try to get out, and then eventually that collapsed the bank because they just can't raise enough money and they just go boop.
And then we saw, was it First Republic that had a similar issue, but it was with mortgage-backed securities. So again, they had all of these long-term fixed assets at really low rates. And a bank is kind of, they loan out money at rates, and then they obviously have to give interest to people who deposit money. And recently you've had interest rates go up, but they've got all these fixed assets at really low interest rates. So what they're earning is on those fixed assets is kind of staying very low, but what they have to give out in interest to depositors has just gone up because that's variable. Like the savings rates are completely variable. The fixed deposits, the short-term fixed deposits, all variable. So at least to some extent, all the banks who have any long-term fixed assets, like long-term 30-year mortgages, have seen their earnings just get just crushed by this pressure of rate rises. And as you said, for some banks, if that results in people pulling money out, then they actually have to sell the assets for 70 cents on the dollar rather than being able to hold them to maturity.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. If they signed up for a whole lot of government bonds in 2020 for what, 0.5%?
Yeah.
And that's all they're going to get. They're not going to get more than that. That's all they're going to get. But yeah, you're right. Savings rates are now a lot higher, so they're taking a loss.
Yep.
What else did it say? Meanwhile, many banks' Q2 results showed growing profitability pressures. Growing profitability pressures that will reduce their ability to generate internal capital. This comes as a mild U.S. recession is on the horizon for early 2024, and asset quality looks set to decline from solid but unsustainable levels, with particular risks in some banks' commercial real estate portfolios. That was also a quote in the research note. CNBC notes, though authorities went to great lengths to restore confidence, that's what we saw, the Federal Reserve step in and say, hey, it's all okay, we're going to come to the rescue. Moody's warned that banks with substantial unrealized losses that are not captured by their regulatory capital ratios may still be susceptible to sudden losses of market or consumer confidence in a high interest rate environment.
Yeah.
And that was the big hoo-ha, wasn't it? Is that this stuff, you know, held to maturity, it kind of bypasses the regulatory stress tests, because for all intents and purposes, like, the bank does want to hold these assets until maturity.
Yeah.
So they're just like, oh, that's okay. You're going to hold that bond for 20 years? Yeah, all good. No stress. But in reality, they have been forced to sell them to raise money. So
it's
a little bit of a hoo-ha.
And of course, they're going to want to hide those unrealized losses because...
they don't want to tell people. Yeah.
No, a lot of companies want to continue to report bigger earnings because bigger earnings is likely resulted to the stock price going up, tied to their compensation. So of course, if they can, if there's a legal way for them to hide losses, then they will do it. And yeah, held to maturity assets is kind of one way that they can do it. And as we've said, it's in any other environment, it's kind of fine. Because in any other environment, in a declining interest rate environment that's been like the most of the last 30 years, those assets become more valuable. So it's not as if it's a very unique kind of situation that the banks are kind of finding themselves in.
I hadn't thought about it the other way around. It's like an ace up the sleeve.
It's the downside is that people can refinance. So people can refinance at lower rates on the way down, whereas people aren't going to refinance a 30-year fixed mortgage on the way back up. But But those assets don't have any kind of unrealized loss risk, because it's not as if there's this temporary kind of decline in the value of those assets.
Interesting. What else have I got? The Federal Reserve in July lifted its benchmark borrowing rate to 5.25 to 5.5%. Yes, we know that. Having tightened monetary policy aggressively over the past year and a half. Yes, we know that. In a bid to rein in sky-high inflation. We know that too. We expect banks' asset liability management risks to be exacerbated by the significant increase in the Federal Reserve's policy rate, as well as the ongoing reduction in banking system reserves at the Fed and relatedly deposits because of ongoing QT, Moody's said in its report. Regional banks are at greater risk because since they have comparatively low regulatory capital, Moody's noted, adding that institutions with a higher share of fixed rate assets on the balance sheet are more constrained in terms of profitability and ability to grow capital and continue lending.
Yep.
There you go. I don't think I have anything more to add on this story.
Right.
Just them yarning about potentially going into a recession in 2024, but who knows if that will happen.
Yeah.
That is just all speculation.
All right. Well, good job, Moody's. You've done something. Who's next week? We're going to hear from S&P.
S&P. Everybody's looking at credit ratings agencies.
They're all getting
in the news.
They're all getting free marketing.
Something.
They're getting free marketing. They basically did nothing, but they're getting free marketing in the press for weeks. So S&P's going to come out and downgrade. Now they'll downgrade 20... I don't know, some sector, like 20 restaurant companies. They'll just come out of nowhere. Just
downgrades Apple's corporate bonds to D. Wait, what?
Hang on a second. Imagine if they just made a typo in like one of the press releases and they just put D instead of A.
Oh, no.
And they just killed a stock. Hang on, Apple's in default. So what?
Hang on, what the heck?
Stock just goes to zero.
Yeah, whoops. Fat finger. Yeah, whoopsies. Yeah.
No.
I wonder what had happened. Surely nothing. Surely no one would start selling Apple stock because of, I don't know, what, Moody's, or if Moody's like fat fingered it.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be pretty funny. Maybe for like 5 minutes, there'd be a bit of a dip. But then I think people would probably figure it out.
Yeah. It's kind of like those times where a big institution puts through a buy order incorrectly, adds an extra zero by mistake or something. You see this like massive spike out of nowhere. Although I think those get corrected, though. I think there's actually a way to reverse that because I think they do. I think there's actually a tolerance for that. It doesn't actually stay like that. That gets reversed or something. I'm not quite sure how that happens.
The intern
could
makes a mistake
out
or
of my arse right now. Sorry?
The intern makes a mistake or something.
Yeah. Sorry, it was Jimmy again. Sorry. Bloody Jimmy.
Put the decimal place in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, tell me, Hamish, tell me about this this new meme stock in town.
Yes, so
we've had what have we had? We've had GameStop, we've had AMC, we've had Hertz, we've had Bed Bath Beyond.
Yep.
We've had BlackBerry. Nvidia, BlackBerry.
Man, there's a lot.
I'm trying to think of there's a lot at this point.
Yeah, there's a lot of
meme stocks.
Yeah, I kind of do. You like the name meme? I think meme stock. It's a good name. It perfectly represents exactly what's going on, which is just a bunch of people who are not really that serious.
The degenerate gamblers.
I was going to put it a bit lighter, but yes, degenerate gamblers of Wall Street bets,
like us at the Vegas casinos.
Yep, exactly right. exactly right. But yeah, so we've got a new one this week. Tupperware Brand Corporation. Which is, of course, a company that's been around for quite a few decades, known for their revolutionary plastic storage containers. which, you know, in 2023, you know, plastic food storage containers doesn't hold that much. Yeah, it's not exactly that crazy. I was watching a bit of Plain Bagel's video on this. He said that, plastic containers last forever, and there's a lot of... A lot of competitors making plastic containers now. So it's while it might have been quite a good business, you know, some time ago, over time that competitive advantage is kind of and repeat customer orders has kind of dwindled over time. So as is the case with most meme stocks, although not the case with Nvidia, which we covered a little while ago, but as is the case with most meme stocks, it's a company that's, you know, kind of nosediving into the ground. And that's when it kind of picks up quite a bit of attention. So the company has been struggling for quite a while now. Its peak revenues were in 2013. It had $2.7 billion of sales, which that's a lot of plastic containers.
Of plastic containers.
Yeah, they also own a number of other brands as well outside of plastic containers. So I'm sure it's not all plastic containers, but they've been in decline since then. And they reported revenue of $1.3 billion in 2022. So quite away from their peak. Along with the decline in revenue, their profitability has also collapsed. In 2013, again, back in their peak, they reported $274 million worth of earnings. However, in the last 5 years, they've been unprofitable in 3 of those 5 years. The last 24 months, they've been consistently unprofitable.
Can I just say, if you're selling plastic containers, plastic containers, how can you not, like, if you make like $2.7 billion, how can you not take home like $2 billion? Like, come on. It's got to be, how much realistically would it cost them to make a plastic container? It would be like peanuts.
Yeah. It'd
be like a cent to make one container, surely.
That is a very good point. I don't know what's going on inside. Well, actually, that is kind of funny that you mentioned that, because one of the criticisms of the company has been that their reporting is extremely opaque. There's no... if you look at their balance sheet, it's kind of funny. It just says current assets and then other current assets. So everything's just dumped.
My God.
Everything's just... All the lines are just dumped into other categories. So there's a lot of lack of clarity on what assets they have, how they're spending money, even just categories of how they're spending money. So it's funny you mentioned that, because it is kind of it's been one of the criticisms of the company. It's like, what the hell are you spending money on? Like, what assets do you actually have? Yeah. What are these other assets? Are these real assets, or are these just, you know, just a bunch of air that you've somehow, you know, snuck into the balance sheet over time?
That's a red flag.
Yep. That's certainly
intangibles,
is.
Dude. Strong brand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like the value of their patents or something from plastic containers from the 1950s.
20 years ago.
Yep, these are still worth billions. Trust me.
Trust me. When yeah, we're gonna make bank off this plastic container idea.
Yeah. No one else anyway, is sorry. Ever gonna make plastic containers. No one can ever. Well, it's kind of funny because it would have been obviously. I'm sure they had some patents at the time, but that obviously Probably. Doesn't exist anymore. And I guess it's one of those things where even if you did have a patent, it's really hard to, I guess, defend. A pattern like that, like how would you? I would imagine most plastic containers are probably being manufactured out of China now, and there's just, you know, there's no real branding to them. It's just no one has any brand loyalty or anything. Bless you.
Thank you, mate. That was coming for a while.
Yeah, no one has any brand loyalty for a plastic container because it's a plastic container. Like, what's the worst that's going to happen?
You're not going to tell your friends, oh, that's not the Coles one. That's the Tupperware one.
That one only lasts 4 million years. That one's going to last 4.7 million years. Okay, I'll get that one.
Oh, dear. Take care. So funny. No, you're right. You're right.
But, it is. So they've been struggling for a little while. And then, you know, on top of... They're not being profitable. They've been kind of loading the boat on debt. So the combination of obviously unprofitability and lots of debt is a nasty combination. So they have about 700 million in long term debt, and they have about 100 million in cash. So their net debt is over almost $600 million in a company that's also losing money. So on the back of that, the stock fell over 95% in the last 12 months. So the stock's been absolutely just collapsing. And there's a couple of interesting milestones that I thought we'd talk about through that 12 months before we get to what's happened recently, which is it's been inducted into the Meme Stock Hall of Fame. But the biggest drop for the stock came in November of 2022. So the stock dropped 50% in a day on their earnings. And the reason for that was the earnings were not great. But on top of that, the company also announced that they may soon fail to meet some of the financial covenants on their credit agreements. So, yes, that's a problem. So most debt deals that companies make will have kind of certain conditions that need to be met, whether it's certain revenue requirements or certain leverage ratios. They can't have a certain amount of debt compared to earnings. And that's the case with Tupperware's debt. So they had a minimum requirement for the net leverage ratio. So the net debt divided by their EBITDA kind of earnings figure. So if that got too high, so if they have too much debt compared to their earnings, then essentially the company would become insolvent, right? So the creditor would be able to... the creditor would be able to call the debt, essentially, which is an important thing to understand when you talk about companies having debt loads, because it's not as if, well, if they just struggle for a year or two, it's okay. The debt's not due for 5 years. You have to consider, are there covenants in the debt that could be breached and cause the debt to be called today, not in 5 years?
That's insane.
It's just a thing that is
good thing to think about.
Yeah, and it's absolutely relevant for companies that are really struggling, that are no longer profitable, that have seen consistent declines in their profitability, and they've kind of taken on more debt. So that was in November of 2022. In April of this year, the company reiterated the likelihood of it becoming insolvent because of failing to meet these covenants. And they also failed to comply with a bunch of requirements for their New York Stock Exchange listing. The first one's kind of funny. They failed to file their 10K, their annual report.
What? What are they doing?
Which is funny. I mean, I think a company only does that if there's something really, really bad.
They need to hide. I don't know about you, but we talk about management, how important management is. I don't know anything about the management, by the way. But immediately from what you've told me so far, they haven't earned my trust.
No.
Like really opaque reporting, or if they get around to it, it seems like.
If they file.
Yeah. You know, not filing a 10K. Like, I don't know.
Even,
this sounds dodgy.
Even the... in November of 2022, when they said that they might breach their financial covenants, that was kind of, I think it was on page 3 that they said this. It was like the last page of the release. And the first page of the release had kind of a quote from the CEO, and it was fairly positive, which is kind of funny to see.
It's a great time over at Tupperware. We're doing well. You know, we're selling lots of plastic containers. All's looking good. And we might just...
We might be bankrupt.
But gloss over that. But yeah, you know, we're having a good time. You know, morale's high.
Yeah.
Some containers are flying out the door. Until we go bust next month. But anyway...
Yeah.
God damn.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, so they failed to file their 10K. They were then given 30 days to fix it. And in that release in April, they said they're not going to release it in the 30 days. So they...
What?
I can't remember if I checked this, but I don't think they've still released their 10K. I'm pretty sure. I'm not actually sure on that. But at least back in April, they were at least a couple of months late on that. The New York Stock Exchange also has a number of other requirements for the company to be listed. So one of them is maintaining a market cap over 50 million, and they fell below that. The equity has to be over 50 million. The stock has to have a stock price of above a dollar for it can't go below a dollar for more than 30 days. So these are just kind of requirements for being listed on the New York Stock Exchange.
Interesting.
Compared to being kind of delisted and becoming just a penny stock. Traded on the pink sheets. I don't think they use those anymore. But yeah.
Interesting.
So yeah, so and all of this is really the result of the company stumbling, but also just the stock price completely cratering. Kind of put them under some of these requirements. And so yeah, the company's been on the brink of bankruptcy. And apparently that's now a buy indicator for retail investors. So
of course it is.
Yeah, hopefully you've all got that on your checklist. Company, high debts, untrustworthy management team, on the brink of bankruptcy.
Almost about to be delisted.
Not even filing their annual report. That's one of my...
That's so good. That's so funny.
Not only not filing, but then stating in an announcement that they had no intention of filing. So good. Apparently these are...
Do you want to buy this stock? Yes, please.
But they're buy indicators because the stock has now surged over 700% in the last 3 weeks. So obviously, you know, it's fallen 95% in the last 12 months. So it's not anywhere near, you know, back where it was. It's certainly had an uptick in the last 3 weeks, 700%.
Crazy.
And
actually, interestingly, like a year ago, it was at $11.37 per share. Yeah. Now it's at $4.24, up from 64 cents.
Yeah. Yeah. So
yeah, 62 cents. Yeah.
It's kind of crazy. It's recovered, you know, quite a significant amount of the decline. It does go to show, right? Like if the stock falls 95% and then it goes up 700%, it's not even halfway back up. So the rise has to be, you know, quite considerably larger than the decline.
Yes. That's true.
Yeah. And I tried to find kind of why this happened, and there really wasn't anything that happened. I mean, obviously, there was some of the things we've spoken about, but in terms of anything that happened 3 weeks ago when the surge began, nothing really happened. There was no announcements, right, as far as I could tell. So it seems to have just gotten picked up on Wall Street Bets and what's that other one? I think there's like a Twitter for stocks now. FinTwit or something like that.
FinTwit, I think, isn't that just used to describe all the finance bros on Twitter?
Okay. Yeah, right.
I think so.
Okay. There's a forum. I'm not sure what the name is. It's something along those lines. Maybe someone can remind me what it is. Obviously, there's a bunch of forums where people just suggest stocks to buy. This one kind of got picked up on some of those forums. It's potentially people seeking to capitalize on another short squeeze, kind of like the GameStop kind of hysteria where you have a stock that's heavily shorted or heavily bet against by hedge funds. And if they can, you know, add enough buying pressure, make the stock go up enough, potentially those funds will close their short positions. And in order to close their short positions, they need to actually buy the stock. because they've kind of borrowed the stock, so they need to actually go into the market and buy it, and that can force the stock up even further. So that's probably the only explanation besides, you know, pure degenerate speculative gambling. There's nothing really. I'm trying to give it a little bit of like a whiff of some like rational, rational thinking, like 1% rational thinking. It's probably a mistake to even try and rationalize it. So,
looks like a bit of a short squeeze, as what we've seen with a few of these other meme stocks.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So simple as that, hey. Would you like to hold this in your portfolio, Hamish?
I would not. I'd probably opt not to.
Really?
You know, but I'm holding out. I'm waiting for the 10K. When the 10K comes out, maybe
we'll do thorough analysis.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
That's a good way to think about things. Yeah. When the 10K comes out, we'll take a look at it.
Yeah. I like a company that reports their results at least once every 3 years. You know, like at least show that you know they've got some data for us. So yeah.
No, their quote is, as Warren Buffett says, you should be okay if the stock market shut down tomorrow. And that's what they're just saying. Look, if you're a long-term investor, you should be happy if we don't report earnings for 10 years because you just trust us that much.
That's a terrible idea.
That's ridiculous.
It's excellent logic.
What a ridiculous story. File your 10K.
Yep.
Jeez.
Yep. Come on.
Wake up the intern that's putting it together or submitting it to the SEC.
Yeah. Jeez.
Anyway. So
there we go.
Wow. Crazy story. All right. Let's talk about AI. You want to talk about AI, Hamish?
Yeah. What's that again? What's that?
It's artificial intelligence.
Right.
It's basically machine learning.
Right. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's basically, I say AI, you buy stock. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. You got that?
Yep.
Okay. So we'll try.
Yep.
AI. What are you going to do?
Buy stock.
Nice. Got it. Cool. All right. Nice. All right. Good work, Hamish. It's an interesting story. Google and Universal Music Group are negotiating AI-generated music tool, report says. So Google and Universal Music are in talks to license artists' melodies and voices for songs generated by artificial intelligence as the music business tries to monetize one of its biggest threats. Mm-hmm. Quote, an artist's voice is often the most valuable part of their livelihood and public persona, and to steal it, no matter what the means, is wrong. Universal Music General Counsel Jeffrey Harlston told US lawmakers last month. Discussions between Google and Universal Music are in an early stage and no product launch is imminent, but the goal is to develop a tool for fans to create these tracks legitimately and pay the owners the copyrights for it, said people close to the situation. Artists would have the choice to opt in, the people said. Warner Music, the third largest music label, has also been talking to Google about a product. Oops. Sorry, that's just my phone. Never mind. Warner Music, the third largest music label, has also been talking to Google about a product, said a person familiar with the matter. So how interesting is that? They're actually thinking about creating some sort of platform where AI, well, you can use AI to legitimately create a track with legitimately an artist's voice, except the artist was just never there. But the artist still gets fair pay and get some sort of royalty.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
You could make a track. You could make a track like with Drake.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I've seen a bunch of this popping up on YouTube. I'm sure it's on TikTok as well, where you'll have people have used AI without permission, but they've used AI to say make Drake sing a Kanye song and vice versa. Or even I've seen some with like, it'll be like SpongeBob or Homer Simpson's voice singing a song. And some of them are really cool. Like, especially when you have, those ones are a bit silly, but especially when you have like, you take like a Kanye or something and you apply that sound to, I don't know, The Weeknd a song. And there's some really cool combination. And obviously these are all just being done without compensation to the artists, which I think this is going to kind of help with, hopefully. But it is a really interesting thing because, people like to listen to covers of songs, but often, you know, this potentially opens the door for unlimited covers where one artist, you know, sings or plays the song of a different band or artist. So it kind of does open the floodgates for the types of music that that people can listen to.
Yeah. And I think people are people get trapped in the, oh, this won't be a thing, you know, whatever. I think for speech, for voice, I think it will be a thing.
Yeah.
The reason I say that is because AI developed or synthetic, synthesized voices are already a massive thing. Like if you watch what is it, the last episode of season 2 of The Mandalorian on Disney Plus, the Star Wars show. This is a major spoiler. If anyone doesn't want to hear a spoiler right now, then skip ahead by about 1 minute. So you've been warned, there's a massive spoiler coming. But with that, okay, you're not listening if you don't want to know that I'm about to say the spoiler. Okay, moving on. But they bring back Luke Skywalker.
And how dare you spoil that?
Bring back Luke Skywalker, but it's a version of Mark Hamill that, you know, is the Return of the Jedi, the episode 6 version of him. And he sounds different now to what he did back then. He looks different now to what he did back then. So they use AI and deepfake to do the look of him to rewind the clock. And that's a little bit clunky. It's a little bit clunky when you look at it. It doesn't look exactly right yet. But the one thing that it sounds perfect. It sounds absolutely like Mark Hamill of 30 years ago. But the thing is that everybody thought, because it's so perfect, everybody thought the voice was legit, but it was 100% synthesized. Nothing about the voice was original audio.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It was all synthesized. And it sounded perfect. It sounded exactly like Luke Skywalker from Return of the Jedi. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's insane.
Anyway.
And yeah, audio, yeah, I guess, I mean, audio is just easier for AI to replicate than video. Both will probably get incredibly good. But yeah, especially when you have artists that have, it's like artists and public figures just have a ton of sound and video out there of them that AI can just grab and feed into the algorithm. It's very effective already.
You know what I think will be interesting is how I think there will have to be some sort of disclaimer in a song, because the synthesis of voice is so accurate now, and you know let's say Drake opts in to this service, so you can use Drake's voice AI synthesized for your own song. And you can say featuring Drake.
Yeah.
But we all know how some music goes these days, is there could be some pretty outrageous lyrics. It's like, what if you just make Drake's synthesized voice, which sounds exactly like Drake, say some very mean things, lightly. There would have to be some sort of disclaimer that says this voice, you know, in this song, Drake's voice is not real, it's synthesized. Otherwise, you can make them say whatever the hell you want. Imagine them getting cancelled over something they didn't even say.
Well, that speaks to the wider issue that I think is going to come up faster than it'll be regulated, which is we kind of need disclaimers on not just music, but all kinds of content, and whether it has any kind of AI. And there kind of needs to be something in the metadata as well that indicates that.
Yeah.
I saw a case, I think it was from last year, might have been a little bit earlier. There was a woman who was, I think, either in a divorce filing with her husband, or she was, it was a criminal case against him for domestic violence. And she actually used AI to fake a phone call of him being abusive towards her. And they found this out later that it was fake. That
Wow.
She used a program that was just available on the internet, and they obviously were able to figure out that it was fake. But it does call into question, potentially just evidence, things online. Can we really trust what we're going to be seeing going forward? And it's a big problem that I don't think anybody knows how to solve yet. So like everything else technology wise, it's probably going to hit us before way before, you know, any good regulation comes down. So
yeah.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
It's a new world.
Yeah. Music executives liken the rise of AI-generated songs to the earlier days of Google-owned YouTube, when users began adding popular songs to the soundtracks of the videos they created. The music industry spent years battling with YouTube over copyright infringement, but the two sides established a system that now pays the music industry about $2 billion a year for these user-generated videos. The issue was thrust into the spotlight earlier this year when an AI-produced song that mimicked the voices of Drake and The Weeknd went viral online. Universal Music, home to Drake, Taylor Swift, and other popular musicians, had the song removed from streaming platforms over copyright infringement.
Wow.
Drake in April slammed another song that used AI to mimic his voice, calling it the final straw, while rapper Ice Cube has described such cloned tracks as demonic. So there you go.
Wow. And it's interesting because, again, you kind of think, how are they going to stop this? like the internet,
yeah, I don't know.
It's hard to imagine. I mean, on Spotify and these official streaming platforms, they can potentially do stuff to fix it. But, it's just another kind of funnel that's been opened on the internet that, as we've seen with everything, is just, copyright in just all kinds of directions has been kind of... It's gotten much more difficult for the original owner to track in all kinds of things. It's just kind of another floodgate on that aspect, I think, as well.
Yeah. I think as long as you get the major players on board, like the Spotify's, SoundCloud's, you know, YouTube Music, that if you have that, they have some sort of tick box saying you acknowledge or you disclaim that this has AI-generated voice in it, and there's some sort of disclaimer. It's kind of like how we tick this has paid promotion on YouTube, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
As long as the big players are on board, that'll go a long way. But you're right. Like, there'll still be stuff out there.
Yeah, it's just tough because
floats around memes and that kind of thing.
Yeah, like, I think YouTube probably has the best copyright tracking, ID tracking system out of any platform. And, you know, I mean, even with that, people use copyrighted material in all kinds of content all the time.
That's
and
true.
And obviously there's fair use that's involved. There's so much like crossover of using people's content and using pieces, using whole pieces of content all over the internet. So you have to imagine that, you know, maybe music is going to be, you know, a similar thing to that, that people will be able to, you know, add, use AI in that way.
Yeah. The chief executive of Warner Music said on Tuesday, with the right framework in place, AI could enable fans to pay their heroes the ultimate compliment through a new level of user-driven content, including new cover versions and mashups. That's what you were talking about ages ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
He added that artists will have the choice to opt in. There are some that may not like it, and that's totally fine, he said. So there you go.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, I thought this... I didn't know this story was going to be about that. I thought this story was going to be about... like Spotify generating music with AI, like complete, like for themselves.
Oh, right, okay.
Which is another thing that I think a lot of people kind of think is a bit dystopian, is the idea that, you know, that they use an AI to track which sounds and which melodies and which rhythms or whatever pitches in voice people tend to listen to, because it's just all data driven, and then create music that's completely artificial. Which I think is probably another thing we're likely going to see.
Yeah, no, definitely. Although that'd be good because maybe the recommended music will actually be good.
eventually. That's the one thing I'm praying for, is for Spotify's recommended to actually get good.
All right, Hamish, should we do some Q&A?
Yeah, let's
do some Q&A.
What have we got?
As always, if you guys wanted to ask a question for Q&A, you can either drop the question in the, what's it called, Spotify question box on each episode, on the most recent episode, sorry, or you can drop us a comment on the most recent YouTube video version of the podcast. They're the two different ways. Okay, Hamish, where shall we begin?
Ask me this first one and I'll...
ask you the first one. All right. I shall ask you the first one. When investing in a company, what aspects should you look for that would help it be a more favorable investment? Oh, gosh, this will be a long list.
Yeah, there's a lot. I'll just pick one that I think is probably at the top of the list of things. If you made me pick one thing.
Can I guess?
You can have a guess. Yeah.
I reckon Return on Investor Capital.
That's exactly it. Yeah. So if I had to pick one thing out of price, so if you're setting price aside and you're just looking at the business, return on invested capital, high return on invested capital compared to peers on a consistent basis is probably one of the best indicators that a business has something unique, is just a better sustainable business than its competition. And it makes perfect sense. It's simply, why can this business generate more profit compared to its peers for the same amount of capital invested? So if you have two companies manufacturing with a factory a certain product, but one company is able to price their product three times as high, so they have the same costs, everything's the same employees, the same factory, the same plastic, the same materials, but one company is pricing their products three times as high, well, it's therefore generating a much higher return on capital. It's very likely they've got something unique, and in that, you know, for a physical product, it might be that they've got a brand and they're really good at marketing that product and they've got a good ecosystem for it. Or maybe the business is at a bigger scale and therefore their manufacturing is actually cheaper on a per product basis. So the price of the product is the same as competition, but the costs are lower, so the profits are higher. So return on invested capital is kind of like the anchor for all businesses' competitive advantages. If they have a competitive advantage, you will see it in their ability to either lower their costs, lower their investments, or increase their profits, you know, when compared to competition. So that's what I would put right at the top of the mountain of things to look for.
Yeah. I think I can just answer more generally. I mean, there's obviously a massive long list of stuff you can look for. You can look at debt management. You can look at growth rates, making sure the company's still growing. I think just generally remember the four key pillars of Warren Buffett's investment approach. You have to understand the business. Then after that, you need to ensure they have a competitive advantage. Then after that, you need to ensure that the management operates with skill and integrity. And then lastly, you need to make sure that you're not overpaying for the shares. So you need to do a valuation and have a margin of safety and look for the shares at a margin of safety price.
Yeah.
So they're really the four key pillars of which I'm currently making a course about. So stay tuned.
Ooh, very exciting.
All righty. You want to send us a question?
Yeah. Hi guys, got a question. How do you go about analyzing the value of mergers and acquisition if a stock you own announces one? Do you have any?
This is a good question.
Any thoughts on that?
I think honestly, you've just got to go about it in exactly the same way. I mean, if they're acquiring a company for a certain amount of money, go in and do the same approach, the 4M analysis, but for the company that they're acquiring. So go in, try and understand it to the best of your ability. Granted, I guess it should, if you've already looked into a company that you're invested in, the company they're acquiring probably sits in the same industry. Sometimes not, but probably yes. So you might have a bit of a good context around that business already. And then look, see if it has some sort of competitive advantage, but also analyze it from a perspective of how does this merger acquisition contribute to my investment, my company's moat? Does it expand their moat? Then same thing, one of the main reasons that companies get acquired is because they want the people in the company. So look through the management of that company as well. And then if you can, if it's a public company, try and do a little valuation. See if there will be a premium. There's always what is it? I think it's normally like a 30% premium on the shares. Is that right? When public companies get acquired.
Yeah.
So that you do, I guess you do have to factor that in, but you know, make sure they're not horrifically overpaying for the acquisition. But I don't have any, like, that would be my general advice, I think, but I don't have any hard and fast rules around this. It's not something I don't think I've encountered this. Have you encountered it? Am I spitting crap or
no,
do you feel like
I mean,
that's...
No, I mean, what you've said is pretty much fair. You just kind of want to assess, if it's a business acquiring or merging with another company, you know, with as much data that's available, which might be very little if it's a private company, but yeah, just trying to assess it in a similar way. I'll take a different approach to talk about this. I think it's also interesting to kind of look at whether companies are kind of serial acquirers. So their whole history is that they basically just acquire businesses. You have to be very careful because it's kind of often a quick and easy way for a business to grow their revenues or their profits at the expense of their effectiveness, so their return on invested capital. And, you know, most executives or management teams are not Warren Buffett. They can't, you know, constantly find incredible deals and just keep acquiring companies. So a lot of the time it actually ends up destroying value for shareholders. And it really means that they often have no faith in their existing operations. If they're always looking to buy something new, then they may have little faith in the ability to organically grow, you know, their core business. There's exceptions to that. There's strategic advantages in some industries to being larger and just acquiring competing companies. But yeah, that's just something to watch out for. If a business suddenly is doing a lot of acquisitions, it might be because they've run out of ideas of how to actually grow the business organically.
Yeah, that makes sense. Alrighty. Well, I think that that'll just about do us for today.
Yeah.
Thanks for the questions, guys. That was good. We've got a couple still to get through for next week. But yeah, if you have a question, you want to chuck it our way, then head over to the most recent podcast and leave us a comment or chuck it in the Spotify question box. But with that said, thanks everybody for tuning in. As per usual, thanks Hamish as always for joining me. That was a good chat today. We covered a lot of good topics. And yeah, thanks as always to Seeking Alpha for sponsoring the podcast. And with that said, we are going to bounce out of here. We'll see you guys next week.
See you guys.